This is Deirdre Kinahan, and you are listening to the Live from Irish Arts Centre podcast, bringing you closer to live Irish arts in New York City. For more information, visit irishartscentre.org.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Susan McKeown, and I'm not in the Irish Arts Centre today. I'm with Eleanor McAvoy in Dublin in the hottest summer we've had in years in Ireland, and we're on the top floor of a beautiful old building on Eustace Street in Dublin, the Quaker Building. And it's great to see you, Eleanor.
It's great to see you too. It's been a while. It's been too long.
Yeah, and we've been having a good chat already. I'm looking forward to seeing you back in New York again. But you're an incredibly busy person. I've been keeping up with you as much as I can. And just to remind listeners, you penned the title track on the biggest selling Irish album of all time. You're one of Ireland's most successful singer-songwriters, and you've had an incredibly busy and prolific recording and touring career. I don't know how you do it, because I can see you're in Australia, you're taking an award here, you're playing at a big concert for a humanitarian cause, you're on the board of IMRO, the Irish Music Rights Organisation, and you have a family. How do you do it? You have it all.
Not very well. Well, I suppose music is my life. You know, that's what I do. It's not something I ever need a holiday from. Do you know what I mean? It's as natural as breathing to me. And so it's not work in one way. It's not work. I mean, the travelling, all of that kind of thing can be work, but in terms of the creative part of it, I can't not do it. Do you know that kind of a way?
It's absolutely
what gets me out of bed in the morning, so not doing it would be detrimental to my health and well-being. So that's really what I do, and I just do it to the best of my ability. And I suppose I've always gone, I haven't always made the most sensible commercial decisions in my life, maybe, but I've always gone with where my heart has wanted to go in terms of the music. Be that maybe not being with a major label, or not, you know, taking that route sometimes. It's always appealed to me more just to do the musical thing.
Well, then, depending on how you define success, maybe you have had the most successful career because of the choices you've made and gone with your heart.
Well, I think success means something different to me now than it did to when I was 25. You know, when I was 25, I wanted to conquer the world. That was my definition of success then. Success now is at the age of 46 is a whole different set of criteria. It means being able to sleep really easily at night. It means being in good health. It means, you know, people around me being happy, you know, having great relationships, having great friends, being able to open a bottle of wine every now and then, and, you know, have interesting conversations with people. I mean, that to me is a successful life.
That's fantastic. And you can see that you have embraced that, you've really gone after that, and what's striking is the balance that you have in all of the different roles. And talking there about career choices that you made, you know, it's debatable whether those choices were as it seems like you mightn't have thought you made great choices, but maybe they were. I mean, you can look at it now with the perspective, especially with your work with IMRO, looking at the trajectory the music industry has taken. You've always made your own choices, and then at one point you made the choice around 2001 to go on your own, to get away from all that, and that was when things were starting to crumble over there anyway.
Yes.
So you still were able to hold on to your own integrity about your music and make your own choices.
I think I was lucky as well. You know, I think at the time when I decided to do that, unbeknownst to me, the music industry was going to fall apart anyway. So I think I was lucky that that happened at that time. And, you know, to be honest, and I have to be honest when it comes to the record companies, I benefited from huge investment from the record companies, which has benefited me subsequently in my career. So I can't really diss them completely, because, you know, they invested heavily in me early on, and that I still benefit from that, you know.
That's wonderful. I mean, it was at a time when labels were still actually investing in developing artists' careers, and
yeah, so
you got the best of it.
I've been lucky. That wasn't skill or judgment on my part. That was just pure good fortune. So.
And tell me more about where you're from, your upbringing, and your early family life.
I grew up in the north side of Dublin in Cabra. Not a million miles away from here, and into a kind of a very strict Catholic religious household, almost psychotically religious, to be honest, with this weird bohemian twist. Like, both of my parents were very musical. My dad was an artist, he was a civil servant, but also an artist. So you had a very peculiar mix of this very fundamental religious thing going on and also the musical thing going on. And, you know, there would have been interest in poetry and literature and all that stuff, you know. It was funny, I was looking for something there recently, a copy of Moore's Melodies, and I couldn't get one for love nor money in rare bookshops or whatever. And I called my sister and said, "Do you have a copy of Moore's Melodies?" And the disdain with which she said, "Of course I have a copy of Moore's," you know, it's like, I may not have furniture, but I, you know, of course I have a copy of Moore's Melodies. I just thought it was very funny. But that was the kind of household it was. There was, you know, Joyce and there was Yeats and, you know, Mahler playing in the background. But you had this weird, very strict thing going on as well.
I love Irish families because we all have our own peculiarities and weirdnesses.
yeah, any Irish
and
family,
to love them.
You delve into it and it's yeah, it's true.
And your mother, you said she was musical too?
She was musical. Now, they never would have had the opportunity to learn because, you know, times were harder in those days, and I suppose they never would have had the kind of money to be spending on piano lessons, etc. So she just used to play a bit of piano just on her own. My dad played a little bit of piano, a bit of harmonica. But they were determined that we would learn music. They were very keen on that happening. So my sister took piano lessons with the woman around the corner in Cabra. She then taught me the piano. And she entered me for a little exam one day when I was about 4. And I went to this exam, and the examiner was from England or something, you know, it was from somewhere else anyway. This kind of slightly posh woman came over. And she asked to see, she kept me after the exam and kept doing tests with me. And she asked to see my parents. And when she met my parents, she said, "Look, you know, I really think you should do something with this child. She's very gifted musically with her ear and stuff. So you need to take this a bit more seriously than you are." And she said to them, maybe get her to play an instrument like the violin. So that was how the violin came into it. So it took a while because we didn't have a violin, and there was a neighbour gave us one, but it was the wrong size for a child or something. And so it took a few years to get it together. But eventually I got a violin, I suppose it was about 9, and I started learning violin. And I went to the College of Music and I got a scholarship for there. So when I got the scholarship, it meant that all my tuition was paid. So then they said, "Well, look what we can pay now for the piano," because they had the money to pay for the violin anyway. And then I got a scholarship for piano. So I got free piano and free violin tuition. Every year I got that scholarship, so free tuition basically.
What a wonderful story.
Well, it has a wonderful story with a slightly sad end, Susan, because they've just done away with that scholarship last year. DIT had to let it go because of the financial crisis here. Okay. So it's awful. I think somebody else now, the same kind of person that I might have been back then, and they won't have that opportunity.
Well, maybe there could be ways and other ways. I can see that a lot of people who've been very successful out of the boom and still are holding on to that are looking to invest in other ways. Maybe something good could come through IMRO, or maybe there's another way if people were aware that those kinds of opportunities are diminished. Now, that's interesting. Now you've got one of the wheels turning. Well, still, for you, the fact that you were only 4 years of age and somebody noticed that you were an artist and had those abilities, and
I know, I was very
said it to your parents. Yeah. I mean, it was very clear it was, that moment.
Well, I was very lucky. It was very lucky that they did that. And of course, you know, I suppose I'm trained in the piano and the violin, but what I do for a living is sing and play guitar. I've no training in either, so it's interesting as well that that's been my career. And I probably have a brother and a sister to thank for that, because, you know, they both played at home. I'd look at them playing, I'd kind of copy what they did, and so they would have been a big influence on me, even in what they were listening to. You know, my brother was into Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin, all the rock stuff. My sister was into, you know, Leonard Cohen, Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Edith Piaf, people like that.
A great range. That was going to be my next question about your influences, your own.
Well, I absorbed their influences big time. Simon and Garfunkel, you know. I suppose the big difference for me was it was always song-based with me. I was always slightly obsessed about the song in a way that maybe my brother and sister weren't. They were maybe into the playing aspect or the musical aspect or the arrangement. Also, I was very into pop radio, which I don't think either of them were. And I used to listen to the charts, you know, every week, and I used to write down the lyrics, and I can do it now even on 2 listens. I can get the lyrics of a song. I've developed a little shorthand as a child. And I used to write down the song, and then I used to take it apart and see how it was constructed. And I used to love doing that.
So that's clear in your work, because you're such a brilliant songwriter and you have such a great ability to connect
with
large amounts of people, you know, connect with your work. And
well, I enjoy I enjoy that end of it. I enjoy the fun intellectual end. I mean, it's not the end you use when you're actually writing, because, as you know, you write from the heart, you write from an emotion, and you're feeling so belligerent about something or so obsessed by something that it comes out like that. But the technical thing then comes into play at some point, I think.
And you want to express it in a way that you can reach as many people as possible so that they can identify, you can universalize to some extent, connect with people and express it in a way that many people will understand, and it'll give meaning to them as well.
That's true, but I think very often I don't try to be universal. I try to be personal, because I find that the more specific you are about your own situation, the more universal actually that has.
I would agree with that. I say universal, I mean to try and express it in the way that is a unique experience, but people will understand your experience and be able to connect from their own.
Yeah, because we're all the same. Human beings are the same. And it remains the same. You read Shakespeare, you read, you know, Thomas Wyatt, you read the poets in the 1500s, and they have the same problems and issues and jealousies and internal conflicts that we have. Human nature is just human nature, and it's regardless of what country you're in, regardless of social class, or a lot of our issues are the same.
The struggles are the same. Yeah. Well, just to finish up, I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on the future of the music industry, because you're someone who has maintained your career at a very high level all the way through, while the trajectory of CD sales has gone down and pirating and all those things have changed the music industry. What do you see in the future? A small question.
I genuinely don't know, Susan, really don't know. I think the way it is at the moment is you've got to be on the road a lot. That has altered. You know, it was the case before where you could write a bit more and maybe other people would do your songs, you'd make more money from that. But now you've got to be on the road. So that's how it's changed up until now. Where it's going to go in the future, I think that the anarchy that they have at the moment with regards to copyright has got to be sorted. That will be sorted. But I don't know what the model for that will be. It'll take smarter people than me to work that out. But I hope that they sort that out, because I think it's quite hard for people starting off today. I don't know how they do it. Just don't know how they do it. So I do think that has to be sorted, but I've no idea how that's going to happen.
That sounds hopeful, even though it's difficult. There's a struggle happening, but there is hope at the end of it. Well, looking forward to seeing you in New York at the Irish Arts Centre on Thursday, the 12th of September.
Thanks very much. Looking forward to it.
Cheers, Eleanor.
The wind blows and hailstones are drenching these old clothes. I'm frozen and failing to see why everyone's out just to knock you and hurt you. I'm aching from just trying to be. Will you guard me? Never let them harm me. Reach your arms around me. Will you be a harbor at my shoulder? Always watching over. Try to hold me closer. Shelter me and shield me from the world. From the world. My faith has been fractured by outlaws and actors and others who've passed through my door. I'm hoping what's broken can someday be mended. I'm open to offers or cures. Me, never let them harm me. Reach your arms around me. Will you be a harbor at my shoulder? Always watching over. Try to hold me closer. Shelter me and shield me. Will you guard me? Never let them harm me. Reach your arms around me. Will you be a harbor at my shoulder? Always watching over. Try to hold me closer. Shelter me and shield me from the world. From the world. I harbor a hope as the rain soaks my coat. There's room in your harbor for me.
Thank you for listening to the Live from Irish Arts Centre podcast, bringing you closer to live Irish arts in New York City. For more information, visit irisharcentre.org.